Good morning. I don't know about you, but when I hear stories and the stories of the early church, especially those first Pentecostal stories, I feel a little bit jealous. Because to hear it said like that, that all were there, that all were, that all of the energy was going about, that they looked after everyone, and thousands were joining them every day. How can we not just say, wow? And I wish I was there. But we also know the rest of the story, too. It doesn't take long before there are the stories of things going wrong. Even just a chapter later, we have a discussion, which is one of the weirder elements of the Bible, about giving and withholding, and then the apostles pronouncing people dead, and boom, they were. Not sure that I want power like that. For all of its good and all of what's there, we know that church and community and living out the gospel is a lot of work and takes a lot of building and intentionality along the way. And there's much to celebrate, but we also know and are acquainted with what it can take to build a firm foundation. And our reading from 1 Peter speaks to that. This is one of the texts that gets cited time and again when you read the early end of Acts. It's one of their favorites along the way. This is 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 2 through 10. Like newborn infants, long for pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow into salvation. If indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good, come to him, a living stone, though rejected by mortals, yet chosen and precious in God's sight. And like living stones, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood. To offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For it stands in Scripture, see, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone chosen and precious, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. To you then who believe, he is precious. But for those who do not believe, the stone that the builders rejected has become the very head in the corner, and a stone that makes them stumble, a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the word, as they were destined to do. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people, in order that you might proclaim the mighty acts of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, now you have received mercy. One of the passions that I think defines the North American life is a passion for variety and choice. We love it. And we love having the choices of how we can live our lives. And we know that these choices can be rather important. We know that whether it's red or green in the field matters, depending on your preference. And we have our routines of Coke and Pepsi. The car that drives that made sense to us, our preferred uncomfortable airline, this is the way that we go and how it is. Now we can even debate whether it matters whether we have an iPhone or a ubiquitous Android in our pocket and which one actually works the best. And, ooh, hey, you might get more colors with the iPhone. Even better. Whatever it is, choosing matters. We may not have invented the buffet, but there's a little doubt that we brought it to its fullest expression here. During my time in China, one of the tasks that was given to us was simply to be in conversation with people learning how to speak English. What I found often was they knew the words because the education system there was geared towards you memorize and you recite, which is not a bad way to learn a language. But it is a somewhat problematic way to actually speak a language. So our job was to simply go out and talk with people. And we'd go one evening, two evenings a week, and just be in a courtyard and answer questions from all comers. And it was always interesting to me how disappointed they were that I didn't fit what they knew American to be. I didn't drive a fast car. At that time, it was a 1980 Honda Civic wagon that was a rust bucket. Awesome car, though. I didn't live in a big house, and heaven forbid, I didn't really care about that. But they were there and just like, well, that's American. How are you American and you don't like Michael Jackson? And so having to explain to them again and again that, well, some of our choices are just different with folks who were not used to many choices. And in a culture that values conformity over all else, it was a bit big of an experience. And having individual identity in cultures that value consistency is a huge contrast. For all the choice that we have, though, I dare say that we can be lonely at times. Sure, we might have our strengths and our supporters, those who've made similar choices or expressed preferences similar to ours. But I think we also have a deep wanting for something that binds us together beyond ourselves. As acrimonious as our public life can be, I think sometimes why we are so drawn to the symbols of our country, the flag, the places, the ideal, is that we're looking for that which makes us one beyond just the A versus B versus C that we get everywhere else. We could do well to remember that we are wrapped together to each other in this place and in this time for the common good, no matter what we might say about each other and our ideas along the way. For all the promised connectivity of new media and all the rest, we have seen time and again that the realized experience of our world is greater isolation, alienation, and radicalization along the way. And we know that this is true in our lives, in our politics, and it's often true in our churches. We choose to be who we are and find something that is ours and ours alone. And we want to find how we fit within that choice. On this level, we have much in common with the first hearers of this letter. Theirs was a world of choice. It was prescribed by caste and role, to be sure, but they had choices all the same. They may not have the multiplicity of options that we do today, but they were certainly choosing to do something different by being part of the church. The church was growing like Gentile at this point, but there was still a strong sense of Jewish culture in it. And they had retained a great number of the rituals and rules for the celebration, but they no longer fit in Hebrew culture. And they certainly didn't fit in Roman culture either, with its reverence for the emperor and all the rest. And often the family groupings or the ethnic groupings that they had also came with their own rituals of cult and which deity you prayed to and where you belonged. So stepping and choosing to be in that early church was stepping out of all of that and being neither quite Gentile or Jew, slave or free, or Roman or Greek or anything else. And at the end, they were church together, held and holding their newfound identity together. And they needed to make it work. As Emily has been pointing out over the last couple Sundays, these are our texts. As Anabaptists, these pastoral epistles address the pragmatic issues of people and how you do church together. And they speak with eloquence of how to be a new people in a new and special way. They emphasize the lived and realized faith in the here and now, and instruct a vision of what it means to be people together in the name of Christ. As such, they deeply resonated with people who were looking to try again and try something new, and to be placed being a Christ follower above all else. They resonated deeply with those seeking to do the same thing in a different time, in a different way. So as you read the original ideas and notions of the early Anabaptists, you'll see Peter and James and 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John cited all the time. And in many ways, we know how it is to be other even today. It's worth saying that regular church attendance is not quite the popular sport it used to be. I think the last time I read, the U.S. was down around 30-35% for weekly church attendance. So it's not quite what we just take for granted anymore. So we're church folks in an increasingly non-churched world. But even more so, we're also Mennonite. And being Mennonite means being a little bit strange in other. We're not entirely Protestant, and we tend to even more Christ-centric and ethically insistent than some. And we're not really high church either, because we've long since left those habits behind. And then we certainly have the images that the name just conjures up for people, steeped in what they've seen of Mennonites and the particular ways that we identify ourselves. Even as we've left many of the outward elements of our tradition behind, we find ourselves being other. And with good reason. We are trying to do the hard work of being community in a time and a place that doesn't entirely know what to make of the term. We know how to be societies, but community is something different. And there's a difference between the two. A society is a social order that binds people together in order to establish a way of being, to provide services, and to be there for itself. But community is something bigger than just being a society or a club. Community is something that exists for itself, depending and developing authentic relationships across differences, despite otherness, and across challenges, in order to sustain the unity and the purpose of the whole. Societies use unity to control and maintain. Communities seek unity in the midst of relationship in order to survive and to move. It's a much more difficult task. We do well to remember that within our church and individually, more broadly, that what we are doing, remaining in community, is not just about having enough rules and expectations to keep everyone in line, but simply always takes something more of us and for us. Because community is hard. They take a lot of work. And they're not always fun all the time. Sure, we have the best intentions and we have our common loves and ambitions for life of the church. And we even have our shared history, ethnicity, and traditions that make us one. We can have a lot in common, but that's not what makes us community. My dad, professional historian and genealogist that he is, is often fairly frustrated with my rather nonchalant regard for last names. Oh, who did you meet? It was Tom. Tom who? I don't know. I generally don't have a great deal of recollections for such details or the comprehension of how it connects. And he's always curious about who I had met at camp or at the other meeting and is frustrated that I failed to slot those people into their proper historical and genealogical context. Whereas I wouldn't necessarily recognize a third cousin if they happened to bite me. I take this yes because it's not really my thing to keep score of these things, but I also take it as a point of pride. Because I think sometimes we're given to, we love the connections, we love the history, we love knowing whose roommate you were. And then we mistake all those loves for the community that it represents. There's nothing wrong with a good round of the Mennonite game, but we can never confuse the game with the actuality of what it is to be Mennonite. And that is to be community together, regardless of name, tradition, or food. In order to do this work, we need to hew to something far greater than any of our individual identities or personal choices that we might own. We need something far bigger than that. And we need Jesus along the way. Anyone who has lived in community for any length of time can tell you that it is hard, demanding, seemingly impossible work. Especially if it's intentional community where you want to actually live together and actually share things in common and actually get work done. Because what you're actually sharing that in common, sooner or later, it's all going to fall apart. And somebody will forget to do the dishes. And somebody will eat your leftovers. And somebody will just irritate you. And then you're into now what? We gather together around what we think is important and who we are called to be. But that doesn't stop us from being hurt by the very people that we are linked to. It's all about a truism that if you're going to be in community, you will also be hurt. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. And we don't like to say it out loud, but it is true. But that can't be all the story. Because the other thing that communities do, even in spite of that, is that they work through the pain. We fail each other. It's the truth. But we're also called in community and as church to also heal each other along the way. Writer and pastor Nadia Bowles Weber speaks of explicitly naming this as part of her initiation for church members. Yes, you will join this church. Yes, you are welcome. Yes, we celebrate this. And yes, you will be hurt. To which she then adds, but please, please, stick around long enough to see what happens next. And see if reconciliation might always come beyond. Community at its best can deal with this by doing the work of reconciliation after that. We can all recite a litany of pain connected to the church. I wonder how readily we might give a similar recitation of those places where grace has also shown its face, where healing has been found, where we've done the work together to do something beyond just this hurts, daring much and getting much in return. The church is many things to many people. It's home, identity, and a place that is familiar, comforting, and all the rest. But all of this pales in comparison to the truest call and its faithfulest, its truest call and its most faithful purpose. To be the place where Christ is known in the world. We need the cornerstone of Christ to make it all work. For without that cornerstone, all else is irrelevant fluff. Sometimes we'd rather see church as a place to belong and affiliation and a badge to be worn rather than a place that we are truly bound together as one people, one family, the chosen priesthood, and holy nation that we are called to be. We are being called to be living stones to interact with Christ as a cornerstone. And that requires much on our part. The cornerstone is what places the foundation of the building, keeping it true, straight, and plumb. But anyone who has built anything with stone or brick knows that in order to get the job done, you have to chisel and chip and shape and adjust and cut and manipulate along the way to fit in, to be moved, to build it securely. Natural imperfections have to be smoothed. Accommodations have to be made for the structure to hold together. To build on as the house requires a lot of work. But once it is bound together, it takes much to bring it apart. The church cannot be a place of identity alone. It must always be a place of building and of transformation. We much prefer the metaphor of a body over the more demanding task of being housed together. We're called to the hard work of community, but it keeps bringing us back together to seek Christ together and to see Christ in the other. Sometimes even when that other is someone who may have hurt us along the way. We build community together, for it's Christ that brings us together. And all else pales and struggles to compare. May we be built into one, being bound ever tighter to one another, inspired to do the good work of living community well, seeking always the cornerstone on which we rely, our risen Lord, leading us forward.